sports director, Joe Tate of Ram Radio. 1960 basketball, the Monmouth Zippers win the sectional tournament.
It's Kelly rebounding, in the lane, puts it up, puts it in!
You're in tune with Tate on the Nifty 1150, the time 7-11. Joe Tate sitting in for Pete Frankman tonight on WERE Sportsline. Let's warm things up with a bit of golf news.
Line drive, center field by Lowenstein, it's a hit. Lee will score. Brohammer stops at second, and the Indians lead 8-1.
Pass out to Bingo. Bingo on the run, the gun, no. Rebound, Clement! Clement got it!
Welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Thank you for joining us on the First Energy Cleveland Cavaliers Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts, Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones.
From the Cavaliers Radio Production Studios at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in downtown Cleveland, hi again, everybody, and welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Great to have you with us this evening, and we have a very special show lined up. Of course, last Wednesday, the legendary Cavalier, and we call him a Cavalier, Joe Tate, passed away at the age of 83, and it is only fitting that we pay tribute to Joe Tate tonight on Cavs HQ. We've got a terrific show lined up. We're going to tell you how Joe ended up as the voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers. We've got guests to hear from former owner Gordon Gund, former general manager Wayne Embry, a great friend of Joe's who interned for Joe Tate and now is the radio voice of the Chicago Bulls. Chuck Swirsky will join us. And, of course, Jim Jones and I will share some very special memories and some very special stories. And, Jim, as much as Joe would certainly want us to remember him, he would want us to remember him with some laughter as well. So there's going to be some funny stories tonight to go along with our tribute to Joe Tate.
Yeah, you know, I think there will be. And, I mean, I'm almost sure there will be. Joe was the kind of person who took himself serious but never took himself serious. You know, he was disciplined, but he liked to have fun just like anyone else.
So we will indeed have some fun during this tribute show tonight. Well, as Joe would say, Timothy, get on with the show. So we're going to take a quick time out, and when we come back, how did Joe Tate end up being the radio voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers? We'll tell you the story, and we'll let you hear some vintage audio. Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams on the First Energy Cavaliers Radio Network. Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Alcorn, along with Jim Jones, and Jim, a third voice now joins us on this very special Cavs HQ program. He knew Joe for a long, long time. I would say they worked side by side, but they didn't, because Mike Snyder would sit in the chair that I'm sitting in right now while Joe Tate was up in the perch. So they weren't side by side, but my, oh my, how they knew each other and were such great friends. Mike Snyder, great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Tim and Jim. Yeah, you're remembering Joe, and you're right. I think when I think of Joe, it does bring a smile to my face. Tear to my eye this week, but more smiles than not. And yet, Tim, I don't know if I've really sat down and did all the numbers, but certainly well over 1,300 games, probably some playoffs in there, and a number of those, you know, side by side, occasionally on the road in the playoffs, but generally where you're seated, and Joe would come back to me, all right, Michael, are you still there, those late games? And depending on how the night was going, you know, that would be, time for Benny Bye, or, hey, the Cavaliers are playing well tonight.
Exactly. I can just hear Joe saying those things. Believe me, I heard them as a listener for all those years, so Michael, you try to describe this one on the postgame.
Yes. So, you know, he just had a way, and I know that we've talked about it, and I know Jim can appreciate it, the way he just had a way of really describing the moment, what was going on in the game or with the team, the mood, the atmosphere. He just was uncanny at his ability to do that.
Well, I'm sure there are many listeners who are wondering, how did Joe Tate end up being the radio voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers and becoming this unbelievable fixture in Northeast Ohio? Well, you may have heard that Joe and Bill Fitch knew each other from their respective college days. Joe at Monmouth and Bill Fitch was at Coe College. And Joe then kind of moved on in his radio career, and Bill Fitch moved on in his coaching career. And Lo and behold, Bill Fitch becomes the head coach of this expansion team, the Cleveland Cavaliers. And from here, well, I'll let Joe tell the story.
Well, I was in Terre Haute, Indiana, station manager, and had pretty much given all my local sports over to a fellow who became the voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, and I was doing Indiana Pacer pregame. I was the Mike Snyder of the Indiana Pacers, and then doing the University of Indiana football games on Saturday afternoons. And all of a sudden, out of a clear blue sky, came the call from Bill Fitch, who said, if you'd like to be the voice of the Cavaliers, I think I can get you the job.
Wow. So he hears from Bill Fitch. He's out in Indiana, and with a cassette deck and a little microphone in his bag, he heads off to Cleveland. Now, the Cavaliers had already played 7 games on the West Coast and had gotten smoked in all 7. So they're 0-7, and they are making their Cleveland debut down at the old Cleveland Arena against the then San Diego Rockets. So Joe Tate takes a seat in the stands, and with his cassette recorder and microphone, he now goes for the job of the radio voice of the Cavaliers.
Checking the scoring in the first period of play for the San Diego Rockets, the Big E, Elvin Hayes, 14 points. Larry Siegfried had 6. Stu Lance came on for 10. Calvin Murphy into the ballgame in a relief role, but did not score. John Trapp a couple of buckets for 4. Rudy Tomjanovich got a bucket, as did John Block. And the San Diego Rockets have 38 points at the end of the first 12 minutes of play. Cleveland's Cavaliers with 17 over the first 12 minutes. John Warren with 7. Anderson 1. Johnson 4. And Luther Rackley 5. Rockets pick up the tempo after the timeout for the pass in the middle to Tomjanovich. Deflected. Picked off by Bobby Smith. Down to Walt Wesley. Left side 10-footer. Yes.
McLemore inbounds on the baseline. Waits for the traffic to move. Flips to Rackley. And Rackley pumps home a 10-footer. Luther has 13. Right side Adams, fadeaway 15-footer, rims no, Hayes jammed it home. 26 points for Elvin. He had 23 of those in the first half. That has the fans buzzing here. A real stufferoo by Elvin.
Oh, my. Hey, Mike, you
that's terrific.
You got to love that play-by-play. Oh, a real stufferoo.
A stufferoo. I've never heard that before. This is fascinating. I hired that guy.
Well, here's a quick story. Of course, a couple of years ago, Joe told me he had all of these tapes in his basement, and he was going to get rid of them. I said, oh, no, 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 no. So I went over to his house and went down to the basement. He had boxes and shelves of tapes, and I find the tape, audition for Cavs job, and I had goosebumps. I said, wow. Joe, this is your audition tape. Yep. I like, okay, so I box them all up, and I head to WEOL, Cavalier Radio Network affiliate, where I was employed, and we start turning them all into digital files. Well, I get to the Cavs audition tape, and it starts in that second quarter. And I'm like, doggone it, Joe, where's the first quarter? How can there not be the very first quarter? So after I got home from work, I called him. I said, Joe, where's the first? There never was a first. He literally sat down in the stands with a program and watched the first quarter just so he could get a sense as to who was who, keep score in his program that wow. he bought at the concession stand, and started his audition tape in the second quarter.
That's a terrific story. So that's where the book began.
I guess so. Yes, the infamous book. Boy, Jim, a lot of those names had to bring back some memories for you. Boy, the Big E with the stufferoo, Elvin Hayes.
Well, just to show you how long it was, Calvin Murphy and Tomjanovich, they scored 2 points each in the first half. And the Tomjanovich and Calvin Murphy, I know, they could blink an eye before they stepped on the floor and scored 2 points because they were young kids and they had to mature. But one thing I wanted to add to that is that he and Chick Hearns are from the same area, from the same town. And Chick had the ability, just like Joe, the way they used words, the way they connected, and the dialogue was simple enough that the common man could understand exactly what they were talking about. And it made us feel the game.
By the way, that Joe Tate audition tape, October 28th of 1970.
Wow. Oh,
boy, goodness. It sounds great, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah, the quality.
It was clear.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, did he was like sitting in the stands, Tim, do you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess Mulledy made him pay for the ticket. If you want the job, you're going to pay
That's
for the
right.
ticket.
Someone's going to go to this game. That's a great, that is just, that audio is fantastic.
Yeah, so that's the Joe Tate audition tape. And of course, some lean years to start, but then came this very special season. 45 years ago this season, probably what Joe Tate is best known for, the miracle of Richfield.
6 seconds to go. Clemens gets the ball. Clem to Bingo. Bobby, top of the key. 25-footer. Bingo!
Bobby hit it.
Bingo on the run. The gun. No. Rebound. Clemens. Good! Clemens got it. Clemens got a rebound. And the game's over.
Here comes the play. Unsell lobs it underneath. Straight and that's a three. Ball picked up by Shadir. Shoots it. No good. It's over. Clemens wins.
Whew, I knew I'd get emotional a couple times during this show. That's just unbelievable. Jim Jones, you were on the floor. You were involved with that. So obviously you're not hearing Joe at that point. But later, what did all those calls and those moments that Joe Tate described mean to you?
When I've heard them since then, and I've heard them many a times, especially the last few minutes where Clemens gets the rebound and the Snyder makes the layup and all of that, it's vivid. It really is. It's clear. Because of his descriptive mentality and the emphasis he put on words, Joe was just a master of that. Tim, you and I both, and Mike, I know you've seen him with those 7 to 8 inch thick crossword puzzles. And he's licking the tip of his pencil and writing in and stuff. Oh, I used to hate that. And he would sit there and he'd look over at me like, what? You know, and he would just start back because his use of language and the power of words, all of that stuff, man, Joe Tate was a master at it.
Well, he sure was.
One thing too, Tim and Jim, when I listened to those, it was the madness. It was the loudest to the loudest facility I was ever at for an event. And through it all, through all of Joe's excitement, though, you understood exactly what was happening through all of that.
Yes,
and that's
great
incredible.
Point.
Never got caught up in being just involved in the moment. He still described the play.
That's right.
All right, we got to take a quick timeout, and then we're going to hear some words between Mike Snyder and Gordon Gund, a special conversation that the two of them had. So stay with us. It's our special tribute to the one, the only voice of the Cavaliers, Joe Tate. It's on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams on the First Energy Cavaliers Radio Network. Welcome back to our very special edition of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Elkhorn, along with Jim Jones. Mike Snyder has stopped by to pay us a visit as we look back on the unbelievable legacy and life of Joe Tate. So in our opening segment, we told you about Joe's arrival in Cleveland and how he got the job. And, of course, his unbelievable calls during the miracle of Richfield. Well, following that time, Ted Stepien took control of the basketball team, and, well, needless to say, the relationship between Ted Stepien and Joe Tate didn't work out well. So Joe left for a couple of years, and then Gordon Gund bought the team. And Mike Snyder, I'm going to turn it over to you at this point, because Gordon Gund, who, of course, was blind, Joe Tate was his eyes as far as the game on the floor, and you had a very special conversation with Gordon.
I did get a chance to talk to Gordon last week, Tim, and Gordon was so more than willing to come on and talk about Joe Tate, and we'll go kind of through that as I reach Gordon, and he had these first thoughts to say about Joe Tate.
I thought the world of Joe Tate. It is a sad occasion, but he had such a great life and such a complete career and did it his way, which he would always do and which he had to always admire. And I think the fact that he left this world the way he did was the way he wanted to when it had to happen. So that's the thing to be happy about, too, for him. He didn't suffer a lot more than he already had.
Well, Gordon, as you mentioned, Tim, when he bought the team, Joe was basically kind of an exile after that Stepien era. So I asked Gordon really one of the first things. Think about this. He just bought the team, and one of the first things he did was to bring the radio play-by-play man back to town. Gordon, why was that so important?
I always knew him by reputation and thought very highly of him. And when we had the chance to buy it, I never understood why he was let go, because he really kept the thing alive. And I'm sure people like Homer and Joe would tell it like he saw it. He wasn't going to sugarcoat it. And I respected that and wanted him back right away. I felt he would help change the image of the franchise back to something that it had been pre-Ted Stepien. And we were doing all we could to bring back the good days and the ones that people wanted to see more of. And Joe Tate was figured first and foremost in doing that.
And then I followed up and I asked Gordon, well, what did Joe Tate's play-by-play mean to you?
First of all, it was high quality. It was first rate. And that was what we wanted the team to be and wanted the community and our listeners to think of it, our fans, to think of the team in that way. He gave us a real sense of quality, and everybody knew they were hearing it the way it was happening, and it wasn't being changed in any way. That was Joe. And plus, he had so much humor, and he had his descriptions were so great, and his ways of, I mean, how many times I heard slam with the right hand, I couldn't count, but I loved it every time I heard it. It really, it made it come alive in even more ways, because he could describe the moves and the setups, the way the ball was moving, and how the team was reacting or acting all the way along. It was great.
You know, Jim Jones, you were, of course, covering the team through that era, the Mark Price, Brad Doherty, Larry Nance, Craig Elo, Lenny Wilkins, Wayne Embry time. And really the importance there, when you think of Joe's job calling the games, the owner, he knew his boss was listening pretty much every night, wasn't he?
Yeah, he knew that. But Joe was going to be Joe. And, you know, you hear everybody say that. And the first time I heard it was probably from Dave Dombrowski. Something happened, and I was a little upset with Joe, and he looked at me and said, Jim, now that's Joe, and Joe is going to be Joe. And I learned something that day, that I learned something about truth in broadcasting and truth in journalism and how people depend on it, as Gordon mentioned. And I've tried to be me, mm-hmm. which is not Joe Tate, but I've tried to be as honest with our fans as humanly possible, but always respectful of the organization. And that is a fine line, Mike. You know that, Tim, you know that is a fine line. But that's one of the things I learned from Joe. But I also understood where Joe came from, because I was from a small town, Racine, Wisconsin. There were small towns around us like Burlington and Waterford. So I understood the mentality. You are what you are, and no one can change that, and no one should ever try to change it. And fight drastically to be yourself at all times. And that's the way I took Joe. I watched him around owners. I watched him around other people of influence. And he stayed the same. And I picked that moniker up, too, and followed it myself.
Well, Jim, that's so well put in the honesty. And I actually asked Gordon Gund if he ever cringed sometimes at what Joe may have said about the team during the game.
Well, occasionally I would, but I knew he was right.
Right.
What had me cringing was the fact that what was going on the court was not a pretty sight, and not something we wanted to continue. But yeah, I've been asked, well, did you ever think of telling Joe to say it differently? And I just remember saying, well, no, I never did, because I knew whatever I said, he was going to do it his way. He was going to tell the truth and tell it the way it was, as he saw it. So that's, you know, that was one of the things I respected so much about Joe.
And then one of the stories that Gordon shared with me, I asked him if they'd kept in touch in the years, because really it's been 10 years now. It'll be 10 years in April from the last time Joe called a Cavaliers game. And I asked Gordon if over this time had he kept in touch with Joe, and he said that he would, and he shared this story.
I have a grandson who's 21 now, and he's wanted to become a broadcaster, sports broadcaster. No, I thought, gosh, I'm going to, maybe this could divert Joe or give him something that he'd get a boot out of doing. And sure enough, I talked to him about our grandson's, Owen's, interest in basketball and in sports broadcast. It would really be great if he could talk to you. I just have a chance to hear you and to get a sense of what you think about the about being a broadcaster. And sure enough, just after I'd hung up, I was going to call Owen and say, well, you might hear from him. And he'd already called him. And it was great.
Wow.
It was great. And it was terrific of him.
Quite a story there when you think about that, because actually Gordon, he had spoken with Joe. I think Joe had informed him about going into hospice, and they were talking. They had that conversation. Mr. Gunn shares that with Joe about his grandson. And Joe Tate called the grandson, wow, Owen, before Gordon even got a chance to say you might get a call. I don't think that surprises any of us, knowing Joe Tate as we did. But, boy, Gordon just was, you could tell the love and respect that he had for Joe Tate.
Oh, there's no doubt. And I can tell you that, you know, I was at Joe's house in the final days, and Gordon had placed a call just to see how things were and how the family was. They were incredibly close to one another. What a bond. What a relationship. All right, we got to take a timeout. So much more to come. By the way, Mike, thanks for that segment. Just awesome. Just awesome. It's Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams on the First Energy Cavaliers Radio Network. This is Tim Elkhorn, radio play-by-play voice of the Cavaliers. During my time in Lorain County, I was proud to serve as a board member of the Lorain County Boys and Girls Club. Joe Tate constantly lended his efforts and his hand to anything that we asked him to do. Joe Tate was there when the Boys and Girls Club needed him. And now that relationship between the Boys and Girls Club flourishes with the Cavaliers through Campy Russell. Cavs in the Community, brought to you by Discount Drug Mart. We'll be right back with more Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams on the First Energy Cavaliers Radio Network.
Bryce between the circles, around Hot Rod again to the right wing, fakes the three, shoots the three, new record.
Jackson drives into the middle, puts up a shot, blocked by Nance, sets 11.
Bryce swings behind Doherty to the top of the key, drops it to Brand, down the lane, wham with a right hand.
Hot Rod steals the ball, down the floor, wham with two hands.
Back to Wilo, the three in the air,
it's good, he won it, Wilo, and a three-pointer on the sideline, at the buzzer. Virginia, there is a Santa Claus, and he comes from Lubbock, Texas.
Oh, my. Just those wonderful highlights and memories of Joe Tate as we continue to pay tribute to Joe Tate on Cavs HQ tonight. Glad you could join us. And, of course, again, a huge thank you to Mike Snyder for our previous segment, the comments from Gordon Gund. So poignant in regards to what Joe Tate meant to him and to the organization. And as we go through our show tonight, kind of in chronological order, we talked about Joe getting the Cavs job and the miracle of Richfield. And then, of course, Gordon Gund buying the team and bringing Joe Tate back. And then you just heard those remarkable highlights of a great era of Cavs basketball. And that team was assembled by none other than former general manager Wayne Embry, who came on board in 1986 to join the Cavaliers along with Lenny Wilkins and put together a great team and some unbelievable memories. And it's Wayne Embry who joins us now on Cavs HQ. Wayne, we're honored to have you. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Tim. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I guess the first question would be a basic question. Just tell us about your relationship with Joe Tate and what that friendship and that relationship meant to you.
We had a great relationship. Of course, Joe is one of the greatest ever being broadcasting, but as great a broadcaster as he was, he's that much of a person. He's a great person. And he and I shared a lot in common. We liked chocolate chip cookies. We'd get on our team plane flying wherever we were going, and I want to make sure we had enough cookies on board, and if there weren't, we'd have to fight over them. And I was a little bigger than Joe. Not much, but a little bit bigger. So I always went. This is a great loss to humanity. Joe Tate was just a fine human being.
Oh, indeed he was, Wayne. Although, as we mentioned at the top of the program tonight, we've all shed many tears since the news broke on Wednesday, but you can't think of Joe Tate and you can't remember Joe Tate without a few hearty belly laughs. So I can just picture you and Joe fighting over the cookies on the plane and say, listen, we can't let the players eat them. The players can't have the cookies. We got to eat these, right, Wayne?
Yeah. We had to make sure we had plenty on board.
Well, of course, Joe was known as the voice of the Cavaliers, and he certainly will always have that title. But for you, Wayne, as the general manager, Joe wasn't just the voice on the radio. He really was the voice of the Cavs in the community and in the market. Talk about his influence as far as not only Cavs fans on the radio, but with sponsors and the community and the league. Talk about the influence that Joe had.
Well, he had a great influence because people listened to his broadcasts. Of course, they were anxious to meet Joe, and he was always there when we had the golf outings and
right.
other Cavs events, and say a few words, introduce some people, and do those type of things. And just amazing the following that he had. The people, I think, were more interested in Joe and what he had to do as opposed to some of the players and management and ownership, because Joe Tate was the Cavaliers.
Again, we're talking to former Cavalier General Manager Wayne Embry, so gracious to join us on this edition of Cavs HQ. And Wayne, Joe always told me one of the great lessons that he told me as a play-by-play guy was, Timothy, people don't care your knowledge of basketball. They want to know the score and the time and who has the ball and that sort of thing. They don't want to know everything about the game. But Joe did know the game, didn't he, Wayne? He was really up on the game of basketball.
Yes, he did, and he made every attempt to stay updated on changes and what was going on. You know, we'd come to league meetings, and Joe would want to know what was going on, what changes are going to be made, and he would want to always stay up to date on what was happening. And, you know, he just made the game so exciting. And, you know, sometimes I'd go back in the press room and listen to the game on the radio just to hear what Joe was saying and how he called the game. And it's just remarkable.
Well, it's interesting because Gordon Gund in our last segment talked about the fact that he would cringe once in a while when Joe would get critical or question something as far as the team was concerned. But Joe was a brutally honest broadcaster. He wanted the listeners to know what exactly was going on the floor. So I would imagine as much as you may have cringed once in a while, Wayne, you appreciated his honesty.
I appreciate his honesty, and if he said something that I would cringe about, we would always discuss it and give him an understanding. That was one great thing about Joe. He would always like to know why and why the wherefores and that sort of thing, and I like to keep him attuned to it because it helped him do his job easier. And he's just a great fan as well as being a great broadcaster, and he just made the game so interesting. He brought the game to the fans listening.
Boy, there's no doubt about that.
It's almost like they were right there in the arena.
Yep, you're exactly right. Well, Wayne, as we said, we're going to share some laughs tonight. So aside from the chocolate chip cookies, any final story to leave with as far as Joe and you are concerned, something that you look back on and it brings a big grin to your face?
No, I just remember how we fight over the cookies. And we both had weight issues, and we would compare notes there occasionally. There's a lot of fond memories of Joe, but he was a true professional, and as I said, just great for the human race. He was just terrific, and he's going to be missed. And I was fortunate enough to talk to him last week before he passed, and I hadn't talked to him in a while, and it was just great to just have the conversation. I knew he was in failing health, but just great talking to him, and he's going to be missed.
Well, Wayne, you don't need me to tell you what your relationship meant to Joe. So, again, for all Cavs fans, we appreciate you and everything you did here in Cleveland and that special, special friendship you had with Joe Tate.
Well, he was a great man, and it was very much easy to like. He's not only a true professional at his profession, but he's just a great human being.
Yep, you're right about that, Wayne. We appreciate you joining us. Thank you, sir. Wayne Embry, former general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers, joining us on this week's edition of Cavs HQ presented by Sherwin-Williams. When we come back, Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Chicago Bulls, will join us. But he interned under Joe Tate as a youngster. He's got some stories to tell. So stay with us. We're coming back after this on the First Energy Cavalier Radio Network.
I know I didn't go to sleep right away that night. I had no problem with my eyes open going home because it took some serious time to calm down after that game.
Mitchell again. Shoot. Good. Cavaliers lead. No timeout. Warren Robb. Ball knocked away. Game's over. Cavaliers have won it in four overtimes. The Cavaliers defeat the Los Angeles Lakers in four overtime, 154-153.
That's it, Pete. You're either going to sit here and talk to me on the postgame show, or you can go home because your show has just been preempted.
Joe Tate reminiscing about what he always said was his most memorable and favorite Cavalier broadcast, the four overtime victory over the defending world champion Los Angeles Lakers. Everybody listening to this show loves that highlight, except Jim Jones. Jim, you were on the losing side that night in that four overtime game.
Yeah, I was, and I won't make this long because the memory has been long enough, is that I fouled Mike Mitchell so that I think it took us into the fourth overtime. I'd have to listen back to it, or else it won the game, one or the other. But I fouled Mike Mitchell. That was my sixth foul, and I was out of the game. So I did help you, Tim. I did help the Cavs.
Oh, that's awesome. And what an unbelievable game it was. And, again, we're honoring and paying tribute to our dear friend and colleague, Joe Tate, tonight on Cavs HQ. And Joe's presence was not only felt here in the Cleveland market, where he was beloved. But, Mike, as I mentioned to you the other night, when I was on the road last year, my first year calling games for the Cavs, I was just amazed at how beloved he was across the league. And one of his best friends is the NBA voice of the Chicago Bulls, Chuck Swirsky. Of course, Chuck, before his tenure with the Bulls, had been with the Toronto Raptors as the radio voice. But Chuck, it all started with an internship with Joe Tate.
It did. Thank you, by the way, for the invite to talk about Joe and celebrating his life and his world. That clip you played, Stan Albeck was the coach, and he was a former assistant coach under Lenny Wilkins with the Raptors. And so on a charter flight with the Raptors one day, Stan comes over, sits next to me, and we start talking about his career. And it was a tremendous career for Stan, whether it was in the ABA with the old Denver Rockets, or the San Diego Conquistadors, the Kentucky Colonels. And then he went to the NBA, served as a Lakers assistant, became the head coach of the Cavs. And we were going over that game, and he said it was an unbelievable game. So thank you for doing that very, very much. So here's the story. I'm a freshman at Ohio University in 1972. I had never heard of Joe Tate. And people are talking about Joe Tate, voice of the Cavaliers. So 1972, Jim, help me out here. That probably was Joe's, second or third year doing the NBA, right, with the Cavs?
Yes.
The 72-73 mm-hmm. season, maybe the third
mm-hmm. yep.
season. So I happen to be listening. I'm in Athens, Ohio, in my dorm room. And I turn on the radio, and I'm thinking, oh, my word. This guy is really, really good. Ball description, time, score. Time and score there, Tim.
Yeah, Chuck, I know.
Tim, I'll tell you what, you will never live that down. I love you. So I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. We have a number in the sports department, a WOUB, for Joe Tate. And so I am a student. I'm a freshman, and the Cavaliers season is underway. I pick up the phone because I'm doing a sports cast. I call him at his home, and I said, Mr. Tate, this is Chuck Swirsky from WOUB. And because Joe had taught at Ohio U, he was familiar with the call letters. And I said, would you mind, could you give us a 30-second preview of tonight's Cavaliers game? And I'm expecting him to hang the phone up on me. And he goes, sure, why not? And so he gives me 30 seconds. And I said, oh, by the way, can you give us an out cue for WOUB Sports? This is Joe Tate.
For WLUB Sports, this is Joe Tate. And so we did this like almost every other week. It was unbelievable that he would do this. So we're going to fast forward. I've never met the man, only over the phone. We're going to fast forward to 1974. I'm 19 years old. And I call him up and I said, Joe, you know, I'm thinking of, I got to get an internship. How about at 3WE? I could help you out, help Herb score. Steve Albert does afternoon drive. I could help out Pete Franklin. And so he walks over to the office. He was at 3WE, and he goes into Joe Restifo's office and Tom and Dick Ambrosia, and he convinces them to meet with me. I drive up from Athens, about three and a half hour drive, and I'm waiting in the lobby for 2.5 hours to meet with Joe Restifo, the program director. Larry Morrow is starting to come in and out of the lobby area, and he sees me. My appointment was for 9:30. It was 11 o'clock. And so he goes, do they know you're here? And so I said, I hope so. I think so. Finally, I go into the office. Joe Restifo says, Joe Tate speaks very highly of you. You start next week. And that's how it all started. And I met Joe in the first base dugout of Cleveland Stadium prior to a Twins-Indians game. He took me upstairs. I sat in the booth and did whatever they needed to be done regarding ticker tape, fill the machine, change the ink, get scores, make calls, you name it, I did it.
That's amazing. Wow. And you also did some gutter work at his house. Now, you've shared this story with me.
Terrible.
You have to share this story with the listeners. As an intern, you got called on for gutter work.
Yes. So at the time, Joe was living, I think, in Lakewood. Is that right, Tim?
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been Lakewood.
And so he said, you know what, Chuck, can you help me? We need to do some things. This was an off day. Can we do some things around the house? I said, sure. He goes, you know, have you ever cleaned gutters? And I lied, actually. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm really good at gutters. So he goes, great. So he goes over to the hardware store, and he buys this the screens that you put over gutters. Well, I had no idea what I'm doing. And instead of laying the screen gutters, you know, the filters, over the top to create almost like a bubble where the leaves would just bounce off the top and fall, I did it the opposite way, where it was like a scoop. And so the leaves would just stay there. And all of a sudden, it's the fall, and these leaves are coming down on the roof, and they're coming into the gutter. And these leaves, all of a sudden, there's a stack a mile high. And with the rain and the snow, it created flooding in the house. And he calls me up. I'm in school. And he calls me, and I'm in my dorm room. And he goes, Chuck, we need to talk. And I said, what about Joe? The gutters. And I said, what about the gutters? He goes, you've never changed gutters, have you? I said, no. He goes, well, I just had to replace, and then he starts going down the list of things in the house with the water in the walls and the gutters and everything, and it was a mess. But he forgave me.
Oh, that's one of the, you had shared that story with me before.
That's a great story.
That's class. Oh, my. Well, Chuck, as I said at the outset, we've all shed some tears, but anyone anywhere that's remembering Joe Tate is having a belly laugh at some point, because there's just classic stories. And I know you loved him and you had a special relationship with him, and we really appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, pleasure, Joe. And you're right. You know, the last words we spoke, I said, Joe, you know how much I love you and how much you mean to me. And he would always close it off by saying, Chuck, I'm proud of you and I love you. And because, as you know, Tim and Jim and Mike, he had Illinois ties deep in his heart and soul.
Yep.
He was born in Evanston, you know, and, you know, worked in various stations in the state of Illinois, and always found a special place in his heart. But he was a remarkable man, and I know I can speak for not only people like myself,
but also for Cleveland organizations that he worked with. What an unbelievable heart and soul he had. Yep. Thank you.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Chuck, we appreciate it. Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Chicago Bulls, joining us here on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. We'll be back following this on the First Energy Cavaliers Radio Network.
The traffic has been stopped out here on Fruit Ridge, and as we move up on Fruit Ridge Avenue, it's Gill number one and Coffee number two. It is definitely a two-bicycle race as we head into Deming Park. The finish line is the old Fort Shelter at Deming. Here they come up to Fruit Ridge Avenue. Gill, your leader, Coffee in second place, but not by much, less than a bicycle length behind. Gill just lost control there for a moment and is walking his bicycle up to the Milwaukee track. Gill has just hit the wall at Deming Park. Gill just ricocheted off the wall at the gatepost coming into Deming Park. He's okay. He's back on his bicycle. Coffee pedals up next to him to see that everything is A-OK.
Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome back to Kev's HQ.
Was that a bicycle race?
Yes. Yes. So, again, I shared with all the listeners that Joe had these boxes and shelves full of tapes, and Timothy, take them and do what you want. And I found Joe in his very early days of radio calling a bicycle race through some downtown in a small town somewhere. Coffee hits the wall. How about that?
Oh,
oh,
my gosh.
He did everything, guys. He did everything. I mean, we remember him as we are tonight as the voice of the Cavaliers, but of course, the great run with the Indians, but in his early days, college football and all the high school sports that he did, I found some boxing tapes, bicycle races. You named it. Joe Tate at some point called it. Mike, your thoughts on bicycle play-by-play?
Yeah, that was very good. That was that. Yeah, you know, because he's talked about his morning radio and whatever was out there. If there was something moved and there was a sport, I'll call it, and he did. And it's just classic. I'm kind of listening to those. Have you gone through all those, Tim? Or have you had all of them?
Oh, it's amazing.
Wow.
It is absolutely amazing what was and what is on those tapes. And you think about that tape. We mentioned the audition tape for the Cavs earlier in the show, 50 years old. That tape there's got to be 60, 65 years old. And the sound quality isn't bad.
Probably on a woolen sack, right? It was.
You knew Coffee hit the wall on the bicycle.
Right. That's right.
And Smith was within a bicycle length of catching him.
Well,
as we said, a lot of laughs. Yes, there's been so many tears in the last 5 or 6 days, but certainly you think of Joe Tate, and he brings back these awesome memories and big smiles, and a gentleman that we all know very, very well that shared so many of those memories and laughs and smiles. Z-Man Scott Zarrilla joins us on Cavs HQ. And Scott, we all had very special relationships with Joe, but yours certainly ranks up there with it as far as ones that he really treasured.
Well, if you say so, I mean, it's more of a statement than a question, but for other people to determine, you know, like a lot of people, it was a thrill to work beside him and meet him. But what's most important to me is what turned into a friendship.
Scott, you mentioned the friendship, and certainly that's what evolved for Joe and I as well. And people would ask me, you know, what's Joe like off the air? And you can relate to this. He was identical off the air as he was on the air. There was no difference.
No, he was the exact same person. And to a lot of people that only knew his voice or his play-by-play, or maybe just met him passing at a, you know, at a restaurant or an event, something where they didn't get to really know him. They just knew what he did. For those of us that got to know him, when people have asked me, it's like you said, it's exactly what you would think based on what you hear on the radio. But, you know, he was just an intelligent and caring and funny and genuine person. You could talk to him about anything. He would talk to you about anything. And I will miss all of that. I really will. I told a few people that, you know, he and I, for the most part, talked every Thursday morning at 9:55 a.m. And I was on a different dare I say, a different radio show last Thursday morning, the morning after he passed, and it was about 8:30 in the morning, and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do at 9:55 on a Thursday morning. And much like when my father passed years ago, and I know a lot of people go through this, you experience things in life, and your first thought is, oh, I got to call Dad to see what Dad thinks. And halfway through your thought, it registers. Well, a number of times since last week, I have thought, oh, I got to call, Joe would, and you catch yourself. And it hasn't sunk in 100% yet. And it hurts, and it will hurt for a while.
Well, Scott, we know you had a special relationship with him, and certainly I can share with you, and you know it, but he valued that relationship, both working and personal, with you. And so Joe thought the world of you, and I know it was certainly reciprocal.
Well, like I said, everybody on this call right now knows how special he was in his own special way.
And, Scott, we had a lot of fun over the years with Joe talking about food, didn't we?
Yes, and I will give the quick story. The first time I ever lunch with him, and Mike, if you all of you can attest to this happening, the first time I ever met Joe and had lunch with him, we were at a diner, and the food was put down, and myself, Joe, and Dave Dombrowski, and I took a bite or two, and I looked over, and Joe was kind of wiping his mouth, and his plate was empty. And I said, "Where is the food, Joe?" I mean, and I'm not exaggerating, you guys have seen him eat. He doesn't look at his food. He knows it's there for a reason, and it's to be eaten. So, yeah.
Well, Scott, we appreciate you joining us for a few minutes, and we're going to wrap things up here. But this show has been full of great memories and a few tears and a lot of laughs, and that's exactly the way Joe would have wanted it. So we appreciate you stopping by.
With emphasis on the laughs.
Yeah. Oh, we've had our share. There's no doubt. And Mike Snyder and Jim Jones, I know you two have unbelievable memories and stories as well. Cannot thank you guys enough for what you offered not only in this program, but what you've offered to me to now have the honor of my life sitting in the Joe Tate perch. I can't thank you guys enough.
Well, you're welcome, and it's been my pleasure to be part of this show for Joe. This show for Joe, and we need to do more because there are more stories to tell.
Oh, we've just scratched the surface.
Yes.
Again, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
Of course, a whole bunch of thank yous to go around on the other side of the window. Marty Allen, Kurt McLaughlin, Leo, Simone. Those guys were terrific in putting together an outstanding show. Thanks, of course, to Chuck Swirsky, Wayne Embry, Gordon Gund, Scott Zarilla, a great guest list. And, of course, the biggest thanks goes to you, the listeners. We hope you enjoyed our tribute to the one and only Joe Tate. And as our dear colleague would say,
this is Joe Tate. Have a good night, everybody.
Cavs HQ was brought to you by Sherwin-Williams, the official paint and coatings partner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And by Huntington. If you need guidance on your money right now, talk to Huntington. Welcome.